Wow. Fantastic. Take No Prisoners guitar playing there from Marisa Anderson, who has kindly joined us here in the WFM U studios on this lovely afternoon here in the spring. And you're playing, you're in town by virtue of Doug Keith, who invited you to play some shows with him.
Yeah, Doug, he's a guitar player and a singer, and he plays guitar for Sharon Van Etten. And he got my record and got, you know, he liked it, I guess, and got a hold of me.
So how did you hook up with Mississippi? They put out a vinyl version of The Golden Hour.
Yeah.
Which you had originally put out yourself.
No, I actually went the other way around.
I went the other way around.
Yeah, because they're a vinyl-only label.
Yeah.
And so when they decided that they would put that record out, well, it was kind of a long process. I lived in this neighborhood in North Portland, and Eric Isaacson, who runs the label, started up his store in that neighborhood, so I got to know him just because he was the record store guy, you know.
Okay.
I'd go down there, and I liked, you know, we had real similar taste in music and a couple friends in common, and he would come out and see me play, and I'd come to his shop, you know. And it was probably 6 years ago, he was like, I want to put a record out of you. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm really there. I don't really want to right now. And you know, over like 6 years, finally, where he's, you know.
He wore you down.
Well, you know, I got to where I wanted to. I got to where I feel like, I felt like I was okay. I mean, I'm really happy, like, sitting at home playing guitar. Like, it doesn't, you know, it was fine. I was having a good time in my life, you know. I was like, I knew for myself I didn't want to put out a record until I was ready to commit to having it out. You know, it's like one thing to be really excited and record a record. It's a whole nother thing to have this record. And then, you know, you get like these boxes of them and you have to do something with it. And I knew I didn't want to.
But you had put out records in past years.
Yeah, well, that's how I knew I didn't want to.
So you don't care for those other records?
Oh, no, they're fine. But that's how I knew I wasn't up for doing the work. Hmm. Like, because I had put out other records, and so I know how much work it is once you already have, you know, once you have a record out, you gotta get rid of that thing. You gotta get people to take it away from you.
Yeah.
And I just, when Eric was like, yeah, you gotta make this record, and I was like, I'm really happy at home right now. I don't really feel like leaving Portland. I don't feel like the hustle. So, we went back and forth for a long time, and I was like, I'm just not ready. Like, I wasn't ready to commit. And then he came out, and this one night, I don't know, it was probably a few years ago, he was like, you are ready now. You will do it. And I was like, okay. And so I made the record.
You need a little push.
Yeah, I did, I guess.
Or more than a little, perhaps.
I needed a big push.
Like, yeah.
So I recorded it at my friend Michael's house. He's the drummer in a band that I was in. Spent about a year going over to his house, and we pulled up, I don't know, 6-7 tapes, and of just, I would, Eric Isaacson, he was, you know, he said, make this record, and I want you to make a blues record. So that helped a lot, because I could have made any kind of record, like, I don't, you know, and he was like, no, I want you to make a blues record. So, okay, well, I'll do that. And
what other choices might you have made?
I have no idea.
There's
too many, and I would have just frozen, I think.
Oh, so it was good, actually, that he focused.
Yeah, no,
you
it was great. He was like, I want you to play, and I want it to be like this. And I don't actually think I made the record that he thought I was going to make, because the stuff that he really liked that I did is more ragtimey, and I don't do any kind of ragtime on this record. But
no.
So in the end, you know, it's a good record, and I love the record, and he likes the record, but he's still like, well, and actually there was this one song, and he's like, that's the song that made him tell me I was ready, and that song didn't make it on the record.
Oh, that's
and so every
funny.
Time I see him, he wants to do another record, like we're talking about, like when I get back from this trip, I'll probably start, and he's like, you gotta put that song on that record, and I'm like, I don't know, man, it's like, I can't control it, you know, so it's just we have a funny relationship, but he's great, and you know, his record label is a perfect label for me to be on because it's quirky and...
It is quirky, yeah.
It suits me. You know, it's a vinyl-only label with no website operating out of a storefront in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, I didn't realize they didn't have a website either.
No, there's no website.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it suits me real well. But I thought, you know, I self-released the CD because I thought it would be nice for... You know, to be a little more accessible.
Well, the CD is handy for me. I mean, I've played both the vinyl and the CD on air, and just the CDs are very handy. I know people say they're on the way out and everything, but for a DJ or somebody listening at home, they're
a great storage medium. Yeah. You know? They're not an archival medium, but they're great for like moving, you know, you can leave them in your car or whatever, you know, like records are a little more precious. So
yeah, a little more precious.
And like some people, you know, I found that, I mean, I listen to vinyl pretty much exclusively, but I have a ton of friends who maybe don't live in cities with record stores or don't live in cities at all or who aren't like avid followers and consumers of music, but they like to, you know, listen to music and they are pretty much CD listeners.
Or MP3s. That's what those people are. That's what MP3s were made for.
Yeah,
people like that who are sort of searching for stuff online or listening on the go and all that kind of stuff. So the album that we're referring to is called The Golden Hours by Marisa Anderson, who's here with us here in the studio at WFMU. And so what is the title, The Golden Hour, what does that refer to?
Oh, it's my favorite time of day. It's like that hour around the sun coming up or going down.
Oh, so all right. I sort of thought maybe that was it, because that's a filmmaker's or a photographer's favorite time of day.
Huh.
And depends on who you're talking to, whether it's... morning or evening that they prefer.
But well, I prefer the evening because I'm not usually up at that time in the morning.
So for example, the movie Days of Heaven was shot almost exclusively in early morning light, I think, or evening light. And
is that a Wim Wenders?
Terrence Malick.
Oh, I think. I haven't seen it.
So I hope I'm remembering that correctly. But so for most of the day, he didn't film.
Uh-huh.
Just so he could get that really beautiful light in his film. And it is
it
physically
is. Golden,
gorgeous,
right?
Gorgeous
everything
film. Yeah,
glows.
So that last piece that you played on the lap guitar, it seemed like there was sort of an Indian music thing going on there. Are you a fan of Indian music? It seems like there's an affinity there, but it may just be...
Well, I was doing a little bit of like an Eastern scale juxtaposed with like traditional American tunes, you know, in there. I mean, it was a medley. That last one on the lap steel was... a medley of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, and Beulah Land or Do Lord or whatever variation of that little melody. And then I kind of laid an Eastern scale on top of it. I don't know. It just worked for me to do that, I guess.
Yeah.
I listen to some Indian music. I would not at all ever say that I can even approach playing it. I think like... it's such a long form music, and I don't, that's a weakness, I think, for me, is like most of my stuff comes out, you know, in 3 or 4 minutes. I like long form stuff. I like to listen to it, but I really don't have, like that kind of narrative in my head to create.
Yeah. There are pieces of Indian music that on records that are 7 minutes or something like that, but they are the exception.
Yeah. And those have probably been edited to be 7 minutes.
Maybe. I think there are shorter classical pieces, but for the most part, they do seem to be the 25 and 40 and 60 minute things that just go on and on forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't appeal to you, or?
No, I love it, but I just
don't
know how to do it.
Imagine yourself doing
it. Yeah. I mean, there are some bands that do that are like, you know...
they just go on, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's also in that sort of found sound and electronic music stuff. You know, that lends itself a little bit more to long-form playing, but there's plenty of guitar players that can do it, too. I just can't do it. I don't know why.
Yeah, it does seem to lend itself more to a band situation, because I think of, drone musicians or drone bands thinking of earlier, but also... a jazz band, because one person will pick up where the other person leaves off, and they sort of weave in and out, and so you can play a 35, 40-minute cut, and it seems perfectly normal.
Yeah, or if there's two people, and they're kind of having this conversation, you know, like there's recordings by, Ravi Shankar, and who's the violin player? Oh, I'm drawing a blank, but
there's a
two records.
Shankar musician? I don't know, it could be... whoever it happens
to be. Yeah, there's these two records that are just like this duet. It's violin and sitar, and it's really, like, they're amazing records. I love them. But I'm not a good enough musician really to pull that off by myself.
Well, I think it is hard for one single person to do that. It does seem a daunting task to play a 40-minute
piece
of music on your own.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why it's so seldom done.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe piano.
Well, also,
piano,
I think in the Western world, like, listeners aren't, like we don't have that attention span in this culture.
If we ever did, we certainly don't nowadays.
Yeah. That's not, we're not getting more attention.
No, it's going the other way around. So, any other musical influences? Any other people that you feel like are overlooked? That you listen to? Maybe what musicians you've heard that you feel are maybe underappreciated, whether they're contemporary or older musicians.
Well, someone who's overlooked a bit is Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Like, I think she's amazing. She was an amazing singer, an amazing guitar player, and just had an incredible presence. And I think because she almost only did gospel, that she was overlooked in...
There did seem to be a little mini revival of her back in the 1980s.
Was there?
And there were some records that were put out, and I think... that era of gospel is particularly appealing to me, that hot gospel era with electric guitar, because she played a hollow body electric guitar.
She did.
And so...
her rhythm style like rivals Bo Diddley to me. Like, I can listen to them both, you know, like, and feel like they're drawing from the same thing. I love her stuff. And also Washington Phillips. I mean, I think he's a little more well-known than her, maybe. I'm not really sure. It might just be my weird world, but Washington Phillips and the way that he just like can like just, I don't know, he just gives me shivers.
It almost invariably, when I'll play some Washington Phillips on the air, there'll either be an email or a phone call. Who is that?
Yeah.
He does have that certain capacity.
Well, you can't tell what he's playing. You can't tell when he's playing it. You can't tell like anything. You can't tell anything about it. It's just like this ghostly, holy music. So great.
Yeah, I guess would that more music was sort of holy and ghostly and mysterious like that, but I guess I appreciate the fact that it's not all that way, because then we can, when something really good comes along, say, oh, okay, then we take notice of it.
Yeah.
I don't know, you talked about the pre-war blues people that you feel an affinity with. It's not every day, believe me, I listen to a lot of music. It's not every day that you come across a contemporary musician that can somehow, in their own way, get that sort of deep feeling that you get from those pre-war recordings. So your record, The Golden Hour, really jumped out at me.
Oh,
it's not thanks. It's not something, you know, I think it's something that's often tried for and seldom achieved. So I don't know, whatever it is that musicians can connect with, however, so I just think that your music comes from an incredibly deep place.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's really nice. I think that I approach music almost entirely emotionally and intuitively.
Mm.
And maybe that goes back to our earlier conversation about what can classical, you know, what can a classical upbringing give you? And, I think that because of the having the technique not ever be really a problem for me, or if it is, having listened to enough like weird jazz and quote unquote experimental music to use those problems in creative ways, you know, to like take limitations and use them, that I'm never thinking when I'm playing, and
that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, yeah, I don't want to think when I'm playing. I want to play when I'm playing.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like. And when I'm, you know, a lot of what I do is very improvisational, sort of based around themes or motifs, but often that can just be like a feeling that I had that I want to have again, and I'm just trying to get to it again. Like, that is the pretty much the underlying driving force or any, you know, behind anything that I'm playing or writing or doing, is just like, I want to feel like I felt when it felt like that when I did that same thing, you know. And sometimes I have to do something different to get that feeling.
And
it's
do you
almost like a smell, you know.
And is there other when you hear other music? Does it sort of, do you want to sort of translate what you heard? Let's say you're listening to a Bach piece, and just coming, and then whatever feeling that engenders in you, then you want to, does that make you sit down at the guitar and say, whatever that feeling was, I want to get that for something that I wrote or something that...
Yeah, kind of like that. And, it, you know, just to use the example of a bop piece, it might not even come out as bop. It might just be like, oh my God, I listened to like this piece and it made me feel like I ate a pound of sugar and, you know, the sun was shining really bright. Well, like that's going to come out of me different than it's going to come out of Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's going to, like, it's not going to probably come out of me as, like, all these notes or something. But it'll be me having that feeling, if that makes sense.
It is. Well, yeah, it's always a translated process. Yeah. It's still got to go through you, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to copy the music.
Right.
Right? And I'm not even trying to copy the feeling that I would think that the person playing the music has. It's really just me.
Your emotional reaction.
It's coming in and then it's doing whatever it does because of whoever I am, and then it's coming out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know how to explain it any better.
We just want to say once again that we're with Marisa Anderson, and your website is marisaandersonmusic.com. It's Marisa, one S, Anderson, Anderson, music.com. And I really wish you the best, and thank you so much for coming down here and recording some stuff here.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.